This afternoon, live here in WUTC via Zoom, Chattanooga Mayor Tim Kelly joined us for our monthly conversation.
The last time that we spoke, you had just been diagnosed with a breakthrough case of COVID. I trust that you are doing much better.
Well, in truth, I wasn't doing very poorly then. I mean, again, thank goodness I was vaccinated. There's a lesson in it for everybody, because it was, I mean, you know, like allergies is all I thought it was. And as I think I said at the time, it was I only took the test because my assistant was pestering me about it and have an abundance of caution. But yes, the short answer is I'm feeling perfectly well, none the worse for wear.
Let's talk about the current situation here with COVID in Chattanooga. Tennessee seeing the highest rate of new COVID cases relative to population in the country. One in every 500 Tennesseans killed by COVID.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we look at these numbers every day, and it's painful to have you know, the cure in our hands, and yet here we are, right? So we are looking at a number of ways to and do every day, you know, what can we do to get the message out there and to try to promote vaccination as much as we can, wherever we can, to whomever we can. And obviously, we're hopeful that I think President Biden's mandate was exactly what we needed to kind of slice the Gordian knot and just take the decision off of at least large employers. And we are one of those. And so, we're looking forward to seeing what the OSHA guidelines are when they come out, and we will happily comply. Because again, we worked with the Chamber of Commerce to create this Healthy Chattanooga Coalition, which is a group of large employers here who obviously want to make sure that the economy moves forward and that public health is a primary consideration in that. So we participated in that as well, to really, again, try to do whatever we could to encourage folks to get vaccinated.
And let's talk more about that coalition. That is a partnership that includes the city and, as you said, local businesses.
Yeah, it's really our largest employers, many of our largest employers from the Chamber of Commerce. And the Chamber was extremely helpful in helping coordinate that. And in essence, it's quite simple. You know, it's just a three-tiered approach where, you know, the first tier is essentially companies who will at least encourage their employees to get vaccinated. The second tier are folks that are companies that are creating incentives for their employees to get vaccinated. And the third tier are those that are mandating vaccination. And of course, we will see how quickly the federal mandate moves, whether it's held up by court challenge. We don't expect that it will be, but, you know, it may be. And of course, it only applies to employers over 100. So these sorts of initiatives are also very important in their own right.
And this takes place as the city is hosting public vax opportunities 5 days a week.
Yeah, that's right. We want it to make it, you know, as easy as possible and kind of remove any excuses for anybody not getting vaccinated. And, you know, part of that is also making sure that resources are available online, and people know, you know, where to find it when they do finally hopefully get over the hump. And we know many great examples of including one of our own city council people who were hesitant and then, you know, got there. And everybody's got their own story in that regard for folks that are making a decision to finally get vaccinated. And I haven't heard any stories of regret yet. So it, you know, continues to be a challenge just on a case by case and person by person basis of trying to convince them of the wisdom of doing the right.
And meantime, Vax for Cash continues.
Yes, it does. And we, you know, I mean, we like to think that's moving the needle. We don't know what the counterfactual example would be, but we've had, gosh, I don't know, 22, maybe 23,000 signups. And we've given away a fair amount of money thus far and prizes. And so that's been great. You know, we continue to want to publicize that more. And again, it's probably nobody's going to go do it just for the chance to win, but it certainly doesn't hurt. And the folks that have won have all been pleasantly surprised. And it just, you know, reaffirms their, it, you know, look, we good social policy rewards people for doing the right thing. And that's all it is, really.
And the drawing is every Thursday, $1,000 plus additional prizes at sweepstakes.chattanooga.gov. And business owners are encouraged to contribute prizes as well.
Yeah, we've had a good response from the business community. A variety of prizes that have been donated to go along with the money.
Talk to me more about where we stand with curbside recycling.
Sore subject, not least of which in my household. Because the fact of the matter is, I mean, it was caused by a driver shortage, but we also learned, in diving into this, I did specifically, that our recycling program had been kind of limping along on a lot of half truths and untruths. The most egregious of which was the fact that we haven't been recycling number 3 through 7 plastic for a long time, and that's why if you go down to a recycling center, there's no place to put 3 through 7 plastic because it's not being recycled. It's going to a landfill, and hopefully we're starting a process of public input and input from experts and consultants to say, let's go back to the bolts and redesign this thing from the ground up so that it works. Part of it's educational to help people make smarter choices. I mean, my vision is hopefully we can set up the new 311 and Chattanooga.gov website so that people can take a glance and say, hey, the city is recycling these materials. We know, for example, that cardboard and aluminum are still quite valuable. Glass is a difficult one because we're having to crush it up and haul it to Atlanta. I signed on with the U.S. Conference of Mayors for a resolution that Steve Benjamin down in Columbia, South Carolina authored called simply Recycling as Infrastructure. And so hopefully if the infrastructure bill passes, perhaps we can invest in some equipment here to improve our recycling process and system. But it is still a market driven enterprise. And so it is broken, as I said, right now. We're not happy about it, but we will get it right. It will take a little while to get it rewired, but I think it will be something that we can be proud of when it's fixed.
And in the meantime, if people have more questions, they want to find out what they still can do during this transition, they can go online to chattanooga.gov/recycling for information.
That's correct. And again, the recycling centers are open most days, I think 7 days, actually. It's for some hours. I mean, again, I live near Warner Park, and so that's where I go. But you can still do that. They're still open. And again, most things, again, and we never picked up glass curbside. So, and you can take glass to the recycling center. So there are some advantages to doing it. If you can just run out there on the weekends and, I hate to ask folks to do it that are used to doing curbside, but that's just where we are right now, unfortunately.
Let's talk about the refugees from Afghanistan. This is following the events of the past few weeks, the past month, and also something that we talked about before, you creating an Office of New Americans through the budget that you proposed, working with Bridge Refugee Services. Tell us more about what the city is doing, plans to do when it comes to helping Afghan refugees.
Well, we have, in fact, just yesterday, co-authored a letter with our city council chairman, Chip Henderson, to support taking Afghan refugees. I think, Chip and I probably come from different political perspectives, but, we agree that first of all, obviously a tragic and terrible situation and on the human scale and by any estimation. And moreover, right, there are huge numbers of these people who were instrumentally helpful to the United States over the last 20 years. And as bad as the situation is, whatever you think about it politically, we owe these folks. And so we have offered to take Afghan refugees. I will tell you that I don't think that's going to happen in the near term, simply because there are existing clusters of Afghan refugees around the country, and that is where that's where they're sending most new refugees now. But the offer stands, and I expect at some point we will see some. Of course, Bridge Refugee Services, for those who aren't aware, does a remarkable job here in Chattanooga with refugees, and I imagine we'll continue to do so.
regardless of what happens in this case, when the city does take in refugees, what is its role beyond taking them in and partnering with an organization such as Bridge Refugee Services? There can be some confusion out there, especially if there's a problem. We've seen this with some of the refugees that have come from south of the border. What's the city's role once involved in helping to settle refugees in this area?
Well, that is why, in short, we decided to create an Office of New Americans, which we didn't have before. You know, again, as we've talked about, we'll have a chief equity officer at the city reporting directly to me. And then where we did have a small and arguably understaffed Office of Multicultural Affairs, which was led by Karen McReynolds, now Collins, she's still with the city. But again, did yeoman's work trying to cover all these bases for many years. We are going to resource that department appropriately, I would say. And the Office of New Americans, which really is its own animal, and it has its own set of concerns. That office and that person who's yet to be hired will really be charged with orientation, essentially, for immigrants and refugees that are in Chattanooga, to help them take advantage of city services, right? Everything from translation services to, again, navigation. How to find a library? How do you use a library? What community centers? You name it, right? How to get them knit into the fabric of Chattanooga culture to become productive citizens as soon as possible.
Let's talk about the budget. Final vote, September 28th. Public hearing on the tax rate the same day. Key investments, one of them, of course, infrastructure, $10 million paving budget, plus a full-time pothole inspector at Public Works.
Yeah, believe it or not, that's not some silly political ploy. Public Works has needed one of those. That's been one of the problems with potholes, is they really didn't have a lot of what gets reported as a pothole is actually a resurfacing issue where there's a crack in the surfacing, and it's not technically a pothole, is a very distinct and separate thing. So I think they tell us that they need somebody to go out and assess the situation and essentially get a condition report back to the appropriate crew so that they can respond appropriately. And so, yes, that is part of it. Of course, the paving budget is, gosh, I guess about three times what it has been in any recent year, because we fell in recent years way, way, way behind in terms of just the pavement condition index around Chattanooga. And so you'll see us continue to make more infrastructure investments here. We just got back a survey of new residents, actually, who moved to the city since COVID began, and that's probably a different interview, very frankly, but heard a lot of really interesting information from these folks about what they like about Chattanooga and what they don't like, what needs improvement. And honestly, the roads was right at the top of the list, so it was nice to see that we were on the right track in terms of the things that people, I think a lot of us have been here for a long time, just kind of gotten used to it. But relative to what folks around the rest of the country are used to, pretty clearly we're way behind the curve. So that was certainly a boring investment, but a very necessary investment.
And then let's talk about compensation.
Yeah.
$30 million focused on fire, police, and public works. 20 to 24% increase for all police and firefighters. $15 minimum wage for workers. A lot of this is all overdue.
Yes, very much overdue. And there was a pay study that came out in 2020 that obviously, because of COVID, was never able to be implemented. And that was arguably overdue. And so we're happy to be able to do it. And to, you know, the first vote on the budget's already happened. It was 9-0. You don't see that very often with a $30 million increase. But I think everybody sees the need. And this is one of those where happily, you know, the right thing to do in terms of, you know, fairness is also the right thing to do in terms of economics, because that's just, you know, where the market is. It's a 15, you know, there's been a lot of talk nationally about a $15 an hour minimum wage. And, you know, in this case, that's what we have to have in order to attract the quality of employees we need to make the city perform at optimal levels. So, and as far as police and fire, you know, long, long overdue. The fire department in particular did a great job of telling some really heart-wrenching stories in front of council in terms of the second jobs that they've had to keep. I mean, we used to have a line out the door for the Fire Academy, and that line is dried up to a trickle because we've fallen so far behind our peers in terms of what we pay. And the same is true at the police force. So yes, it's long overdue. So we look forward to getting that budget passed. It's notable that substantially all of the increase over baseline budget is going for those pay raises.
And it's also a matter of competitiveness because of the stories we've read, businesses unable to fill vacancies, and how the private sector can often and does outbid the public sector.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so this just puts us back on a level playing field. We're certainly not trying to, you know, create a bidding war with the private sector. But I think we'd all agree that, you know, as we've seen, if you can't get your garbage picked up on time, if police can't respond to calls, you know, if we can't put out burning buildings, then what, you know, the private sector doesn't function very well either. So this is kind of a put the mask over your own nose and mouth first exercise, as they tell you on the airplane. It just has to happen.
Let's talk about opportunity. I'm thinking first of the Construction Workforce Center. Tell us more about that.
Well, that's exciting because, you know, it's a really great example of the kind of public-private partnership that happens in Chattanooga that just doesn't happen elsewhere. But it will be at the old Marion Garber School in East Chattanooga. And, you know, it's co-funded by the foundation community, by the county, by the city, by quite a lot of private donors, both again from the philanthropic community and the private community. And you know, it will be a workforce development center specifically for the building trades, not only for kids but for adult learners as well. And as we know, I mean, again, I've said many times, nothing we do in the scope of workforce development should ever be interpreted as discouraging kids from seeking four-year liberal arts degrees. But we know that that's not for everybody, and that there are a lot of folks that there's a giant need in the market for skilled trades, right? And I heard that again and again and again in every single community and every walk of life during the campaign. You know, what happened to Kirkman? And, you know, we had Kirkman School here years ago. And boy, I tell you know, black, white, rich, poor, didn't matter. Everybody, Kirkman polls right up there with Mother Teresa. And people miss it. People, you know, it's people know that that those are valuable skills, and that we're missing the boat if we don't have a way for folks to learn them and get meaningfully involved in the workforce. So I'm looking forward to get opened up.
And we have a lot of construction going on right now.
We sure do. And again, with the infrastructure bill coming down the pike, I mean, again, we knock on wood, we hope that passes because it'll be great for Chattanooga. But hey, you know, right now, again, we don't have the workers to do those jobs. But, you know, hopefully that certainly will help.
And for more information about the Construction Workforce Center, people can go online to constructionworkforcecenter.com. I also wanted to talk about community forward schools and the investment by the city. We've talked about this a little bit before.
Yeah, it is critically important as well. And, you know, the idea here is that kids only spend 20% of their time in school. And, you know, where are they? The other 80%? Well, very frankly, Brian Johnson, who, you know, of course, has recently departed from the school system, but thank goodness is staying in Chattanooga. Brilliant guy, invaluable to the community. But he is the one who sort of approached us with this model, which was an easy thing to say yes to, which essentially takes, at first at least, our seven midtown schools and puts them together with an adjacent community center and puts a sort of a resource navigator there to work with the school principal and with the community center to help children and their families, notably, who may be kind of on the bubble, in trouble, not doing well, to direct them to nonprofit resources to help them get back on track and stay on track and help fewer kids fall between the cracks. And it's a model that in some shape or form has been used with great success around the country. Often hear it sort of referred to as a community schools model. And we're quite excited about getting started with it.
Another investment homeless services.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, homeless services will be getting, just in terms of an operating budget, a pretty big bump up. And because, I mean, any Chattanoogan knows that we are dealing with a level of people who are experiencing homelessness that we've never seen before in Chattanooga, no living memory anyway. And that will be matched by significant capital investments from the American Rescue Plan dollars that are coming from Washington. And we have yet to deploy those, but that will be paired with the operating investment, you know, in the department to really help address the problem in some broad and sweeping way. So that's one that we really, really are, you know, most looking forward to after the budget, because, you know, it's a terrible problem. It's certainly not getting better. And we've got some, you know, stuff we're not quite ready to talk about yet, but some really great ideas to help address the problem in a deeper and more structural way that, you know, that we'll dive into after budget.
And then circling back to police funding in the budget, we've talked about competitive pay. Talk more about the Community Crisis Response Program.
Well, again, that's another one where we're trying to learn best practices from other communities. Denver and Eugene, Oregon, both are notable examples that have what they call an alternative response model. They work extremely well for those that may be sort of concerned with this. And there is quite a lot of concern in some quarters. This is not a new idea. You know, they've been doing something similar in Eugene for 30 plus years, I think. But the notion is to have social workers who will respond to certain calls where an armed officer or an armed officer alone may not be the best response. And it's proven to work. Again, this is kind of a little bit of a toe in the water, because I think the budget calls for hiring of 7, but it will, you know, again, we know it will be helpful. It will take costs out of the healthcare system. Again, a lot of these responses are mental health calls. A lot of them are calls that come in from the homeless community. And, you know, again, these folks are simply better trained many times than an armed officer to deal with the situation. So, again, it's another one that we really look forward to getting underway with.
As we wrap up here, I want to touch on a few events that are happening this weekend, and you will be out there. The first one that comes to mind is the community center, the new community center for La Paz, Chattanooga. It is a step forward for that community, and it's another sign of the growing diversity in this city.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're excited about that. I mean, from what we saw from the last census, it is remarkable that I think we tipped over 10% in terms of our Hispanic and Latino population. And, you know, again, that community really has no significant political representation here. And we're determined to, you know, help La Paz and others. It's a part of, again, our initiative with the Office of New Americans to make sure that they are as fully integrated into every aspect of life in Chattanooga as possible. And La Paz has always been a great partner there. And, you know, I was on the advisory board for a number of years. So we look forward to that opening.
And the other event I wanted to focus on as we wind down here is the dedication of the Ed Johnson Memorial. As somebody who grew up here and has seen the city change over the years, talk to me about what you're hearing from people out there and what this means to you as a Chattanoogan to see this step being taken this weekend.
Well, I think it's incredibly important. I mean, part of what we talked about during the campaign and have talked about a lot since taking office, and we'll talk about more over the next, you know, 3 and some odd years, is tackling the tough issues and not sweeping our difficult history under the rug. I think the process of reconciliation with our difficult history is incredibly important, and not just for the Black community, but also for the white community. And again, for the people that are somewhat, you know, for a lot of people, it makes them uncomfortable. Well, you know, it should make them uncomfortable. I don't think we need to design social systems or life around making people as comfortable as possible. This is one of those things where it happened. You know, people need to acknowledge it and learn from it so that it never happens again. And so I think the memorial is a critically important part of, again, reconciling Chattanooga with our history and making sure that we never forget what happened so that we don't repeat history.
And if people want more information from the city online, if they need to contact the city for information, what are best ways to reach out?
Well, Chattanooga.gov is always the best way. And of course, 311 is still working. I will say we are in the process of, we will be reworking both of those in the pretty near future to become more responsive. Not to get us down a rabbit hole at the end of the interview, but again, our open data, Chatta data, is also a thing that you can Google and take advantage of. There's a tremendous amount. We have one of the probably the top three or top five open data portals in the country here. And we are going to try to rework both 311 and Chattanooga.gov to be more useful, more responsive, and more interesting, frankly. So that you can get plenty of information, probably more than you bargained for, either one of those places.
All right. Mayor Tim Kelly, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for having me.